the Land Stewardship Project, they have some bumper stickers, and I've got one on my truck that says, let's stop treating our soil like dirt. And I agree. We need to treat it as a living organism, which it is. And I think if we would have that thought in mind, that soil is actually a living thing, I think everyone would treat their soil differently than they do now.
Welcome to the 338th installment of Ear to the Ground, the Land Stewardship Project's podcast on family farming, regenerative agriculture, community food systems, and local democracy. I'm Brian DeVore, editor of the Land Stewardship Letter. When making changes to a farm that center around building soil health, farmers often have that famous aha experience, a recognition that what they're doing is setting them on a road that's regenerating the operation and making it sustainable in the long term. For Jerome Fulsis, a crop and livestock farmer in northeastern Iowa's karst country, such eye-openers have come in the form of both the physical and the biological. On the physical side of things, Jerome has been noticing that a creek that runs through his land no longer floods out like it used to. That's because he's built the kind of soil organic matter levels and aggregate structure that allows precipitation to percolate down into the profile rather than running off over the surface. On the biological side of things, several years ago, Jerome's family realized that the antibiotics his son was taking were making him sicker. That's because the drugs were killing the good organisms in his body as well as the bad. This made it clearer than ever to Jerome that it's important to farm in a way that treats soil like the living organism that it is, and to build up and support all the good microbes present beneath the surface. Jerome's 10 Mile Creek Ranch raises corn, soybeans, and alfalfa in highly erosive land. He also has a cow-calf herd and contract finishes hogs. In 1998, Jerome started experimenting with no-till production, and in 2010 began dabbling in cover crops. Since the 1990s, the farmer has seen his soil's organic matter levels roughly double. His hilly fields are not only soaking up and storing water better, but the farm's crop yields have increased, and Jerome is spending less money on inputs such as fertilizer. Jerome says while methods such as cover cropping produce short-term benefits, such as inexpensive grazing for his cow herd, along with erosion control and a lower input bill, he also sees the building of soil health as a long-term investment. For example, by increasing water-holding capacity, his operation is better able to weather periods of drought and is more resilient in the face of extreme weather overall. That's why he compares building soil health to investing in an individual retirement account, or IRA. Just because it doesn't operate in the black every year doesn't mean you don't keep making deposits that build up and pay dividends long into the future. Jerome was one of the featured presenters at a recent Land Stewardship Project Soil Health Economics workshop. After the workshop, he talked to me about how critical it is for his family's farming operation to contribute to cleaner water, the need to bring the IRA mindset to building biology, and the importance of not treating our living soil like dead dirt.
Yeah, on our farm, we're in the Upper Iowa River watershed, and we try to make sure the water, any water that comes off our place, is going to improve the water quality there. But the good part is with the practices we're doing on our farm, which consists of corn and soybeans, and we have beef cows and horses, and I contract finish some pigs. We also have a bunch of timber ground and pasture ground as well. But those practices that we're using, we try to make sure that all the water is percolating into our soil and not running off. And so that's the biggest benefit of what we're doing. Some of the practices that we are using on our farm include no-till and cover cropping. We extensively use cover crops. We're a firm believer in them on our farm, and we feel they benefit the soil a lot.
And I know one of the things with your livestock, you graze the cover crops as well, right?
Yeah, you know, that's another immediate benefit we get from cover crops. You know, cover crops help the soil long term because they build the soil health, but one of the immediate returns that we get is that by putting, for example, cereal rye on our soybeans in the fall, we'll be starting grazing April 1st, and the normal time for our pastures is around the 1st through the 10th of May. So we get an extra 30 to 40 days of grazing with our cattle every spring by cover cropping rather than just relying on our pastures. That saves a lot of money, and it's one of the immediate returns on our investment. We're in the driftless area here in northeast Iowa, so it's really hilly, and that's one of the things that no-tilling and cover crops have really done for us is, like I said, improve the water percolation into our soil, and so that really helps the erosion factor as well as the soil health. We have very little runoff on our soil, even though some of our ground is D and E slopes that we're farming.
One of the things that you talked about was return on investment with, and how one of the ways that we can, I guess I hate to use this term, but justify soil health practices, because they do take more management and more kind of investment on the front end, is to look at the return in investment you're going to get both in the short term and the long term. I was wondering if you could talk both about some of the short term returns on investment that you see and the long term returns on investment. And I think it's important maybe to describe what you see as what is return on investment in your case. Like, what, you know, people talk a lot about profitability, yields. Sometimes they equate yields with profitability, and that we know that that's not always the case. But yeah, what is for you the ideal return on investment, or what is it? How is it you're kind of in, defining it?
You know, in the ag industry, we are always blasted with spend money on this product, and you'll get more bushels at the end of the season. And so, the real concentration for most of agriculture is that we want an immediate return, or a very short-term return on our investment. We spend some money on it in the spring or summer on our crop, and we expect a result of that in the fall. When we spend money on cover crops, or at least on our farm, we do get some of that. As I mentioned earlier, you know, we are able to graze. We are also saving soil immediately. That's an immediate return on our investment. We're also having to use less chemical passes on our soil, so that's an immediate return on our investment. But the other thing that people often forget about is how the soil health is improving on our soil and the long-term benefits of our soil. I mean, over time, my organic matter has gone up, and so if we increase the organic matter, we increase the water holding capacity. So during these drought years, my soil has extra water in it compared to before we were using cover crops and no-till. And so that practice is a long-term benefit. And you don't immediately see that return, but it's there. Other long-term benefits are the increased microbial activity in your soil. And that leads to your soil microbes being able to release more nutrients to your plants, your crops that grow, and so then you need less fertilizer. And so there's another benefit that you have, is that you're spending less money on fertilizer on your crops. And then over time, you have higher yields for your crops too. We are literally having record yields on our farm on a fairly consistent basis with having been doing this for several years. And so you may not see that benefit immediately, but yields are there. Everyone thinks that there's a cost to it, but I feel like it's an investment. You know, we invest in an IRA for our retirement. We don't expect to get a return on that. If I invest it on January 1, I don't expect to get a return on that October 31 that same year. Yeah. But 20 years from now, that return on that investment that I do today is going to be great. And I equate my soils to that IRA, and that there is a great return of long-term returns on my soil if I treat it that way, because it's building that soil health and it gets healthier every year. And then the other thing that goes along with that return is, if my soils are healthy, I have healthy crops, and my livestock that I graze on it are healthier. And so there's just a quality of life benefit that, how do you put a dollar issue on that? But it's worth a lot, right? And so those are some of the long-term benefits that I see from doing soil health practices such as no-till and cover cropping.
I think that's a good comparison with an IRA. And the other comparison I think of is the difference between, if you're looking at the stock market, doing day trading and looking at the kind of long-term investment, looking at it as more of a long-term investment instead of this quick return, because the day trading can drive you crazy and you can go broke pretty quick. But if you look at it as a long-term investment.
Yeah, you know, and your soils and some of the things we've done as far as experimenting with cover crops and trying new things, you know, not everything works like we want it to, and it's no different, but that doesn't stop me from continuing to invest in my soils. It's just like my IRA that I have put money in over the years. There are years that I put money in my IRA, and at the end of the year, it was worth less than it was at the beginning of the year. But that doesn't stop me from doing it, because over the long term, that IRA is still building value. And I see the same thing in my soils over time, is that I'm on the right trajectory in that my soil health is improving. Some years we have setbacks. That's Mother Nature and the life of our industry, but that doesn't mean we quit doing it. We're going to stay on this trajectory of improved soil through our practices.
How long, roughly, have you been kind of using some of these practices, or when did you start kind of looking into them?
Yeah, I started doing no-till back in 1998. I experimented on 30 acres. I had a guy come in and custom no-till 30 acres, and man, the stand I had, he had good equipment, and I saw what we could do without doing any tillage, and the next year I went whole hog. I've been no-tilling ever since. As far as the cover crops, I dabbled into that probably first time somewhere around 2010, and then I really did some for the next 6-7 years, and then about 2018, I really decided that I needed to be doing this. My son had some health issues at the time, and anyway, bottom line is he had to get prescribed some antibiotics, and the antibiotics caused him to have other health issues because it killed some of the good microbes in his body. And I thought, you know what, we have to be doing the same thing when we apply pesticides of any kind to our soils. Yeah, we target that one bad thing, but there's a whole bunch of good microbes in our soils. And so the less I can use, the less good microbes that I'm hurting in our soils. And I'm trying to let our soil be healthy enough to take care of itself. That's our goal.
That's a really good example. I mean, as they say, the first rule of ecology is everything's connected. It sounds like you learned that kind of the hard way, that everything it really is connected.
Yeah, you know, I've been a firm believer in this ever since my son got sick, and I'm not going to do it any other way. And like I said, we continue to try to do new and different things to make our soil even healthier than it is. And sometimes we have setbacks. Not everything works, but that doesn't mean we're going to stop trying to make our soil better.
Did you mention you're not using fungicides or insecticides? You're using herbicides still, aren't you? Or what are you using or aren't using?
We use herbicides yet because weeds are one of those issues that it's very difficult to manage without doing some. We are using less herbicides than we used to because of the practices that we have. That's been a real plus. But one of the things we've quit doing is we are not using insecticides or fungicides at all on our farm. We just believe that there's so many beneficial insects and so many beneficial fungi in our soils that if we're using those, we're going to be destroying more good ones than we are the target pests that we're trying to eliminate.
So you were in the late 90s, you started no-till, and then you got into cover cropping later. Was there a point where you went, oh, I think the soil is really responding in a way that maybe it's kind of self-regenerating, or it's being kind of it's starting to build its own fertility and its own resiliency a little bit? I mean, was there a aha moment, or was it just a really long-term kind of gradual process for you?
For the most part, it's been maybe a gradual process, but you know, one of the things that's been, a couple of things that I've noticed over the years that really made me notice that is that the creek between our house and barn when I was growing up, and I live on the same farm now I did when I was growing up, every time it rained, that creek would come up because most of the water that was landing on our fields during a rainfall was running off and not percolating into our soil. Over the years, I noticed, you know what, our creek isn't coming up as much anymore, and lately it hardly comes up at all, even in a heavy rain. I'm talking maybe 3 inches over 5-6 hours. Our soils have the ability to absorb that all into the soil now rather than run off. And to me, that's kind of a big deal because, you know, over the years we've had, oh, like the NRCS has all these practices like terraces and water retaining structures to keep water from running. But in a way, those are sort of band-aids because the real problem is that the water wasn't going in the soil in the first place. My soils are at the point now that I have, like I said earlier, I have some D&E slopes But it doesn't matter how steep they are, as long as the water that's coming down on my soil is going into my soil and not running off. And that's the key. And so that's been a real aha moment. Yeah, and one other thing was, speaking of water being able to percolate into the soil and how well our soil structure is now compared to earlier, about 4 years ago, my custom planter, we'd had an inch and a half rain in the spring one day. And the next day, he called me up and he was just disappointed because, you know, none of the fields were fit to go. And I said, I think mine are ready. He goes, are you sure? I said, come over and check it out. And we came over and we walked our fields and mine were ready. And we'd had an inch and a half of rain the day before. And he came over and it was great for him because he does not just custom planting for me, but several other folks. But he was able to do my job when he couldn't do anybody else's. Wow. And so that was a really aha moment that, hey, these soils are doing their job and they are in great shape because he was able to get in here a lot earlier than any place else. Yeah, you know, I think the table is turning a little bit, that we have more people that are interested in doing this because everybody is getting on this bandwagon, so to speak. You see it on TV and you hear it on the radio about, you know, healthy foods and healthy products. And you know what? That's relating right back to what we're trying to do with our soils, is healthy soils. And the healthy, you know, my philosophy is that healthy soils makes healthy crops and livestock, right? So, and seeing young people now being excited about that too is great because they're the next generation. My daughter is, she wasn't here today, but she is excited about it as well. And she's really interested in the livestock and the livestock integration end of this. And I think you'll see us doing even more and more soil health practices as time goes on. And that's with her at the helm and not me, because yeah, I'm at the age where I'm going to be working my way out of this. I'm near retirement age.
So she's interested in farming.
Yes. Yeah. She's back at home in the farm today. She was actually down at Des Moines doing some lobbying for some of the things that we've been talking about. So that's with our state legislators. So that's, I'm great. I'm glad she's active that way. And I'm glad that she's coming back. You know, our farm was homesteaded in 1854, and I'm generation 6, and she's generation 7. So it's pretty neat to, and it's really pleasing for me to know that we're going to have at least another generation of our farm moving forward.
Any suggestions for somebody who is just getting their feet wet? Maybe they're a quote-unquote conventional farm and they want to try something different, or they're a beginning farmer getting into this, or they want to make some changes?
I think that one of the easiest ways to get started into using cover crops in particular, if you're a conventional farmer or you've been no-tilling or been trying, you want to experiment with this, and that is to pick a field, 10 acres, 20 acres, doesn't have to be big. And after you get done harvesting it this fall, and when you're let's just say it's a soybean field, and you move on to harvesting corn, and typically you have the co-op or whoever your agronomy provider is come out and spread some potash fall fertilizer on that, because I know they do a lot of that stuff. Call them up and tell them to put some cereal rye in with that fertilizer that you're going to put on, and just they can spread it. They'll use the fertilizer as a carrier. They'll mix it right in. And so for maybe $15 to $20 an acre on 20 acres, you know, $400, you can experiment with this. And it's not a lot of money. It's not going to make or break you, but it's going to give you an opportunity to see what cover crops can do on your operation without a huge risk.
Well, and you were saying that you really didn't, you know, one knock against, say, no-till, for example, and maybe even cover crops a little, is there can be a yield drag, but you didn't really see that, or was that something you did at first and you were able to get over that? Or
if you read most of the magazines out there that talk about cover crops, if you terminate the cover crop a couple weeks before you plant, which is what the majority of people are doing, you're not going to see really any yield drag compared to what you've been doing. Yet at the same time, you've been able to protect that soil and actually maybe improve the water infiltration by having some living roots in there in your soil. You might not see a benefit, but you're not going to see any loss that first year. You're going to, if you spent $20 and you got soybeans, you might actually see a couple bushel yield increase, which will pay for your cover crop immediately. But one of the things you will save immediately is, if you had the cover crop, is that you probably save some soil on your field. And what's your soil worth? I mean, on dollars per ton on soil loss, you know. to buy some topsoil, if you go to any place that sells stuff for like people's lawns and stuff, it's going to cost you $30 a ton, you know, and it doesn't take long to save a ton of soil on your fields.
What did you say you've been able to raise your organic matter? How much?
We have some soil tests from back in the 90s when I first started farming, and the average soil organic matter on our farm then was in the upper ones, somewhere around 1.8, 1.9. And today we're running somewhere around 3.7 to 3.9, depending on the field at our place. So it's taken some time, but the fact that we've been able to raise that much, and of course the NRCS says for every point that you raise your organic matter, your soil will hold another 20,000 gallons of water. Well, that's pretty important during a drought. And so right now, almost 2%, I've got almost 40,000 gallons more water per acre that I can store in my soil when it does rain, so that when we don't have rain, it's available for my crop. I am having fun, and I'm pretty passionate about it. I love it, and I wouldn't treat my soils any other way. You know, the Land Stewardship Project, they have some bumper stickers, and I've got one on my truck that says, let's stop treating our soil like dirt. And I agree. We need to treat it as a living organism, which it is. And I think if we would have that thought in mind, that soil is actually a living thing, I think everyone would treat their soil differently than they do now.
As it happens, the Land Stewardship Project popularized the term, let's stop treating our soil like dirt, in the 1980s, after the phrase appeared in National Geographic magazine. LSP bumper stickers with that pronouncement have since appeared on vehicles all across the country, and other organizations have co-opted the wording for their own purposes. To order your own LSP bumper sticker, and for more information on building soil health profitably, see the podcast page for Ear to the Ground episode 338, at landstewardshipproject.org. If you have comments or suggestions about this podcast, contact Brian DeVore at bdevore@landstewardshipproject.org, or you can call 612-816-9342. By the way, it helps us greatly if you can give Ear to the Ground a rating on whatever podcast platform you utilize. And word of mouth is the best way to spread the news about our podcast. If you like what you hear, tell at least one person about LSP's Ear to the Ground. Thanks to Laura Borgendale, a Western Minnesota musician, for Ear to the Ground's theme music. And a special thank you to all of Land Stewardship Project's members who make initiatives such as this podcast possible. If you're not a member, visit landstewardshipproject.org to learn how you can support LSP. Thanks for listening.